From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 10th day of November, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. By the way, Matt will join us for the Farm Assets Conference. He'll be on stage along with three other brokers that have graduated from the University of Illinois Department of Agricultural and Consumer Economics, the aces of ACE Brokerage. That's what I like to call them, at least today anyway, and we're looking forward to that. You can join us at farmassetsconference.com to register. We'll again talk with Matt today about the commodity markets. We'll also hear about the Safer Ag Workshop that's taking place on campus right now, in fact, where stakeholders are working to build out consensus related to autonomous vehicles and how safety standards and regulations will be developed around the agricultural industry and their use. And then as we close our time out together, we'll talk about the weather forecast too with Mike Tenora at T-Storm Weather, and we'll do all of that on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn for the day at 653 and a quarter, 11 and a quarter lower. The March at 659 and a half, down 11 cents. And May corn futures, 659 and a half as well, also down 11. January soybeans, 1423, 29 cents lower. March contract at $14.28 a bushel, down 29 and a quarter. And next year's November, 21 and a half lower, $13.65. The bean meal at $404.10, down $13.50. The bean oil at $76.09, and that's down, or rather up, 55 cents. Soft red winter wheat at $8.35, down 3 cents a bushel. The hard red at $9.25, down 4¾ cents. Live cattle futures at $153.75, up $1.50 per 100 pounds. Feeders were up $2 and a nickel at $181.70, and lean hogs at $84.87, down 40 cents for the day. Gold futures about $41 higher at $1,754.70. The price of crude at $86.33, up 50 cents for the day. And gasoline at $2.50 and a tenth, 2.5 cents higher. We're now joined by Matt Bennett. He's with agmarket.net. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being with us. Tell me about trade in Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, yesterday's report, of course, wasn't bearish. A lot of folks were afraid it was going to be bearish. And market action yesterday really wasn't anything too exciting. You know, lost a little bit of ground, but quite frankly, as report days go, it was pretty mild. Come in today, and it looked more like a report day on the closes. You know, you're looking at double-digit losses on corn for much of the latter part of the session, beans pushing down 30. No doubt about it, you had some pressure on the market. I think a few things come to mind. You know, I just feel like, you know, there's probably some of this money that's maybe getting a little bit tired of being long grains. There's been a lot of bullish information thrown at the market over the last few months. You know, and corn particularly just hasn't been able to get through that $7 mark. Maybe this market's just a little bit tired for the time being.
If it's money being pulled out, will the market then seek that same level again fairly quickly, which is usually what would be the case?
You know, a lot of times you'll see there's a lot of research actually that shows after the midterm election, you get a little bit of a bump in the markets, but today didn't look like a very good bump. I mean, it was obviously a lower market, but are you going to see the money flow come back in is your question? And I mean, that's a really good question, but there's a lot going on. You know, whenever you look at, for instance, the cryptocurrencies, there's a lot of fear there. A lot of money is evaporated. You got to ask yourself, some of the folks that had money in their pocket, so to speak, or what they thought was, are they going to start pulling their money out of some other stuff due to the fact that a lot of their, value or worth just flat out evaporated under their eyes here lately? So there's a lot of different ways to look at this. I mean, fundamentally, it's still a good situation, especially from a domestic standpoint. You look at the world, you know, and your numbers are ample, if not burdensome. If you look at the CONAB numbers for Brazil, there's no question you could be looking at, you know, an awfully big crop out of that part of the world. Which would essentially bolster especially that soybean balance sheet on a world basis.
If that happens, how much downside potential is there?
We have felt like on old crop beans, you know, getting pushing, you know, well over $14.50 again here lately, that, you know, we were probably $1 to $1.50, you know, above some of the levels we thought we could see. So I think you could easily get that back into that 13.5 level if the market starts to break. You certainly were trying to hold on to some support day today, but it doesn't look like we were able to hold on to it very well. So, you know, I'd say it's a very cautious situation for the bulls. They've got to understand that even though fundamentally here in the U.S. it's a very friendly situation, that doesn't mean the market has to continue to go up because we are already at very elevated prices.
Are you bearish the bean market in that case?
You know, I don't know that I'm bearish. It's just I have a really hard time getting friendly. Now, whenever you look, for instance, at Argentina, they're having some weather issues. You know, a lot of it's going to depend on, A, what's the world macro situation look like? You know, is China going to step in and buy beans like it's going out of style moving forward? Or are they going to do so off the U.S.? I mean, there's a lot of factors at play here. But whenever I look at both old crop and new, I see excellent value. The markets have basically been dead in the water. I mean, just not doing anything. Sideways markets for both corn and beans. You're starting to look like maybe the breakout could be to the downside. So you certainly can't rule out downward move. I don't know that I want to say I'm bearish, but I'm certainly cautious at this time.
So you're also fearful the consolidation that we have seen for the last 9 weeks in the corn market could break down as well.
Absolutely. I mean, typically you're not going to run this type of a sideways market. You know, you just don't go like that forever. At some point, the market's going to break out one way or the other. And right now, you know, coming into the report, it definitely looked like you had some weakness going on. The report I was worried about looked to me like we might have been susceptible. Whenever we'd been looking at such strong prices, not only for cash corn, you know, but for 23 corn, I felt strongly that the best thing we could do is at least step in there and put a floor under some of this. You know, and if you want to let the upside run, that's great. But not having a floor under, for instance, 6.25, you know, 23 corn is probably not a good idea, especially for those of us that have written huge checks for fertilizer, you know, here in the last 30 days.
What are your expectations then going into the Thanksgiving week?
Well, that's a good question. I do think, you know, that you'll find some support in here because ultimately, from a fundamental standpoint, you've got to think that, you know, you're going to have a fair amount of buying stuff into the market. You know, just simply due to the fact that fundamentally we're so tight. But, you know, you've got to figure out kind of where that support might come from. I've got to think that you can hold, you know, for instance, December corn at that 650 level. I just don't see us getting much below that at this stage of the game. But I do think there could be a fair amount of air, you know, under this bean market. Of course, we're looking at Jan for the most part now as being the month that folks are bidding off of. But, you know, I sure wouldn't rule out a very quick move lower. You know, especially if some of these folks get spooked by some of this technical action.
Yeah, and then are you concerned at all about the export market for corn?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, USDA took some exports out of the balance sheet 2 months in a row. This month they chose not to. Obviously, most of us have no issue with them choosing not to. But at the same time, you sure could have made a case for them taking a few more exports away. Our exports have just been abysmal, as you know, and at some point, we're going to have to step in here and see a little more activity. If we don't, they're going to have to take a number that's already, you know, almost 300 below a year ago and trim it back even more. So, you know, it's going to be interesting moving forward, but I have to think that China's going to have to step in and buy some corn at some point. They definitely ran a deficit this year from what they produced versus what they used. While they want to be laggard in their approach and maybe wait on some South American corn, I kind of feel like out there on the world market, U.S. corn is going to finally get its day. I don't know when that might be, and we may not hit the USDA goal, but I don't think that we're going to do anything crazy like, you know, go below 2 billion. But Todd, let's be honest, a 1.182 carryout is tight. It's extremely tight. And so, you know, if we lose a few exports, it's not like we're going to go to a burdensome situation anytime soon.
It should make our conversation at the Farm Assets Conference a week from this coming Monday. That's the 21st day of November, the Monday prior to Thanksgiving. Pretty interesting. Glad you're going to be there, by the way.
Oh, absolutely. I'm looking forward to it.
That's Matt Bennett. He's with AgMarket.net and will join us at the Farm Assets Conference the 21st day of November, the Monday prior to Thanksgiving. You can too. Do that right now online at farmassetsconference.com to register or go to willag.org. Yesterday and today, stakeholders interested in occupational safety related to autonomous agricultural vehicles gathered here on the Urbana-Champaign campus. We talked yesterday with federal regulators about why they were here on this campus today. John Schutzke joins us. He is a professor and extension specialist in farm safety from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And I asked him why it was that the U of I, the University of Illinois, and UW, the University of Wisconsin, work together on this program.
Well, I guess the cooperation started. I've known Dr. Issa for quite a long time here at University of Illinois. We share a common denominator. We both went to school and got our PhDs at Purdue. So we've known each other and sort of run in those same circles as agricultural safety and health specialists. So we were approached, a number of us were approached by USDA about a year and a half, almost 2 years ago, to develop some kind of a workshop, a working group that would actually develop a roadmap, recommendations, research questions to help guide our federal funders, information to help policymakers, regulators, insurance companies, groups like that. It did seem to me that the University of Illinois was a really prime place to have it. Number one, you've got great leadership here with Dr. Issa and also just kind of the infrastructure to help make this happen. Plus, you're situated right in the heart of the Corn Belt. And there has not been quite as much. There's been a lot of robotic and autonomous work done in California. There's been a little bit of work up in Wisconsin, particularly around the dairy industry, like with robotic milking machines. We just kind of felt that this was a prime location, and it would also be a location where we would have a lot of industry people who would come to the University of Illinois. So it's been a really great partnership. Illinois has been awesome to work with. I've got a bit of a history back here that goes back about 30 years, but I knew a lot of the players here, so it's been a great partnership.
What are you hoping that the workshop provides to both the industry and the government?
Well, I think a number of us get involved with different organizations. One example is the American Society of Agricultural and Biological Engineers. You go there and there's a lot of industry people. Those industry people are talking about standards. You may have people at a workshop and they're academia. They're talking about their research or maybe their extension program. So to my knowledge, there has not really been a forum to bring all parties to the table, all voices, all stakeholders. We have not been as successful as we wanted to be with getting farmers and producers to the table. But at this workshop, we do have people who are funding programs and projects. We have some people who do regulatory work. And so the idea is to get together and kind of develop a common framework of understanding, kind of a baseline, so that we're all working off of the same knowledge page. There have been some regulations that have had an impact on this industry. When I say this industry, autonomous agriculture in California. In some people's mind, they're maybe not fully informed based on what's real and what these machines really look like. So it's hopefully to develop that baseline foundation of knowledge across all stakeholders.
On this day, you'll actually try to put some of that to work to come up with what that baseline may look like or the framework in which to build it around, I suppose.
But yeah, today is a chance to really dig in. We've got probably 15 or so really key questions. One example is federal people who are funding occupational health and safety research, I'm really interested in that in my job, but like what do they do? Where do they even start? What are the key research priorities that they need to be looking at? Another quick example is standards. So standards are things that designers and engineers use to create and innovate new products. The problem is, or one of the issues is, that the standards have not kept up. The technology is advancing so rapidly, and these standards take years to develop, and so we've got a little bit of a lag. There are gaps between what's in engineering standards and what the actual practice is. We also eventually have to bring the farmer voice into all of this. I think it's just a little bit early. There's a lot of glitz and glamour. You go to the Farm Progress Show and you've got the prototype, autonomous tractors and things like that, but eventually, I would think within the next year or 2 years, we've really got to bring the producer voice to the table.
Some interesting things that I heard during the program yesterday, for instance, as you were talking about standards, and it may not be something that is codified, but just, for instance, I think the example was ABS brakes.
Yeah.
That if you have an ABS brake, it kind of, everybody knows what that is, it kind of works the same. Or the backup signal on a truck. Just having proper phrases across the whole of the system.
Yeah.
And then
And then you build probably out rather than in, but you kind of build out to those sorts of things.
Yeah, I mean, so those are two good examples. I'm not as familiar, for example, with anti-lock braking system, but a couple things I am very familiar with also that a lot of your audience would be familiar with is the slow-moving vehicle emblem. So if I go to Tractor Supply or I go to my CNH dealer, wherever I go, a slow-moving vehicle emblem complies with an ASABE standard. And it's really important because that specifies not only the language and the terminology, but also how far of a distance will that be visible if you go to the back of a slow-moving vehicle as you approach it. It specifies the size, where it needs to be located. Another example, just quickly, is rollover protection. We know that when we buy a tractor that has a ROPS that is approved by a standard or that complies with a standard, that it's going to withstand the forces of a rollover. So there's some of the same principles that apply with autonomy. It's important, though, that safety standards also hold manufacturers and others to a certain sort of standard in terms of safety and again, being able to depend on that device or that machine to protect people in a dangerous situation.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
That was University of Wisconsin professor and farm safety specialist with Extension there, John Shutsky. I spoke with him earlier today at the Safer Ag Workshop. There's less than a week now to pre-register for the Farm Assets Conference. The cost is $80 up front, $90 if you pay at the door. So farmassetsconference.com right now to get yourself registered to be along with myself and the Farm Doc team, the crop scientists from the University of Illinois, some of the specialists that you hear on our programming as it relates to agricultural commodities, and two special guests, including Josh Linville from StoneX talking about fertilizer, and Mary Kay Thatcher of Syngenta talking about farm policy and the farm bill for 2023. Should be a great day. The full agenda is online at farmassetsconference.com and a way to get yourself registered today. Now let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. Mike Tenura is here from T-Storm Weather. That's tstorm.net online. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us. Let's go through the United States to begin with, and then we'll move southward to Argentina and Brazil. But here in the U.S., I'm wondering what conditions are like in the hard red winter wheat growing regions and whether the cold will change things.
Well, it's been fairly dry over most of the last few months, so a drought is in place across a large portion of that region. In the far northern areas, there's a snowstorm ongoing today, and that will end over the next several hours, but it is something that's going to mark some of the changes that are coming up. It will turn decidedly colder over the next few days across the central U.S., and that will leave us with temperatures that are much more similar to December than November once we get into the weekend. And that's going to continue all the way into the latter part of the month. So a major pattern change is underway. It's going to be a lot colder than normal over the next 10 days. And you'll notice the effects of that starting up over the next 36 hours. As we get into the end of the month, most of the wheat crop will end up turning dormant because of this. High temperatures only in the 30s and 40s, with lows in the 10s and 20s, will quickly turn the crops dormant. And then we'll be heading into the winter from there.
Will there be very much precipitation along with the cold front as it passes through?
Very little across the Corn Belt or the Plains. We mentioned that snowstorm going on in the Dakotas, but there's only a little bit of wheat produced in that region. All of the wheat is located further to the south, and even though we'll see some rain as the cold front passes over the next 24 hours, we're not looking for big totals. After it goes on by, fairly dry going forward besides some rain or snow on Monday.
Turn your attention now to South America, where farmers in Argentina have been suffering through a long-lived drought.
Well, Argentina is in the midst of their driest period in more than 44 years of record, and that's looking at the key states of Cordoba and Buenos Aires. That's kind of like looking at Illinois and Iowa across Argentina. So those two states have been unusually dry for a while. And even though there is 1 to 2 inches of rain coming up through Sunday as a major system passes, it's going to turn dry again after that. The other thing that's going to happen next week is that we'll start to see very warm and hot weather redevelop. Now, if we don't receive about 3 to 3.5 inches of rain through the end of November, we're going to end up having the driest period on record starting in May and then going through November, and then also starting in September and going through November. So basically the last 210 days would be the driest in more than 44 years, as would the last 90 days. So no matter how you dice that up, that's way too dry for corn that's going to be turning sensitive in December. Sunflowers will also be turning sensitive next month. And soybeans are only being planted at the moment, so they could still have some better weather later on this season and get out of this situation. But what I'm trying to tell you is that 1 to 2 inches of rain is not going to cut it. We need to see more rains later on this month. We should see some in 10 to 14 days, but whether or not that's going to be a major event is a little bit too far out to determine.
How far do these dry conditions extend into the southern portions of Brazil?
Well, they certainly extend into far southern Brazil, into Rio Grande do Sul, but nobody in Brazil or Paraguay has been anywhere near as dry as what's taking place in Argentina. To this point, it's mostly been confined to their region, and it hasn't extended too far to the north. The potential concern that we have for Brazil, that being said, is that they've been kind of teetering here over the last couple of weeks with being a little bit too dry. And they're going to see some decent rains as that same system that moves across Argentina sends a cool front through Brazil this weekend and early next week. So that will temper some of the concerns again for Brazil. But it doesn't look very wet next week. And that leaves us in a situation where we'll need to see some decent rains over the last third of November. Now, whether or not that happens is still a little bit too far into the future, but basically it's kind of a wait-and-see game in Brazil. Now, Brazil produces about three times as many soybeans as Argentina, so you really want to see Brazil doing well because that could offset some of those problems in Argentina. But all in all, it's a waiting game in Brazil. It's still a little bit of a waiting game in Argentina just because we'll see what happens at the end of the month. But basically, you can have some concerns over their crops even this early in the season.
Is this related to La Nina?
Most likely, yes. If you look at similar La Ninas going back into the past, two of them were very dry, kind of like this one, in parts of Argentina and Brazil. But another one wasn't all that dry. It actually was a little bit wetter than normal. So not all La Ninas are the same. I think it's fair to attribute this to that setup. As we move into next month in January, typically it's drier than normal when you have this type of La Nina. But again, it's not always the case, but certainly risks are there and they're going to linger for a while.
Hey, thanks so much, Mike.
Yep, great being here, Todd.
That's Mike Tenura. He is with T-Storm Weather. Find him online at tstorm.net. You've been listening to The Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Today, when you go to our website at willag.org, you'll find a link to the Farm Assets Conference, and you can get yourself registered. I hope you'll do that less than a week away before we close registration. $80 up front, $90 if you wait to come into the door. That's the Farm Assets Conference. It's Monday, the 21st day of November. Details online at farmassetsconference.com or a link at willag.org.